Right now, we turn to a federal law that goes into effect tomorrow. If you live in public housing, you may be required to do 8 hours of community service each month or risk losing your home. The new law, which has a very long name, it's called the Community Service and Self-Sufficiency Requirement of the Quality Housing and Work Responsibility Act. It was passed by Congress in 1998. We want to hear from you on this. Should volunteer work be a requirement for living in public housing? Join the conversation. Call us at 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. is Robert Rector, a senior research fellow with the Heritage Foundation. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Rector.
Thank you for having me here.
And joining me here in Studio 3A is Sylvia Brennan. She's the Director of Government Relations at the National Housing Law Project. Thanks for being with us, Sylvia.
Thanks, Lynn.
And why is the name of that law so long? Do you know?
Well, it is a long law, and let me tell you a little bit about it.
Okay.
This law stemmed originally from the Quality Housing and Work Responsibility Act, which, as you appropriately noted, is a mouthful and is referred to sort of in the industry as QARA. And this was a law originally enacted under the Clinton administration in 1998 that essentially provided some rather sweeping changes for public housing residents. The purpose of this legislation originally really sort of stemmed from a desire by the government to assist higher income families to sort of no longer serve as sort of this housing of last resort. They wanted to reduce the government subsidies to families in public housing. They wanted to also pass on this higher cost of housing to residents by doing things such as setting minimum rents that tenants would pay. And the ultimate goal, of course, was to push residents toward what they call self-sufficiency and to sort of get them off of the government subsidy altogether.
Why this requirement for 8 hours of volunteering?
Well, I mean, you know, along the vein of that moving towards self-sufficiency was a part of this act called Section 12 of the Act, which contained this community self-sufficiency requirement, which essentially provides that every adult resident of public housing must engage in 8 hours of community service per month or else participate in what they call economic self-sufficiency programs unless they were otherwise exempted. So,
Robert Rector, let me turn to you. What's the rationale for that kind of a law or that kind of requirement?
What this is a kind of little mini welfare reform in housing that was created along with the large welfare reform in cash aid that occurred in the mid-1990s. With welfare reform on cash aid, what the Congress said was, we do not want welfare to be a prolonged one-way handout. Instead, we are going to require able-bodied welfare recipients to either get a job or prepare for work as a condition of getting that aid. And when we did that in cash aid, what we found was a very large drop in welfare dependence, a surge in employment among single mothers, and a very large drop in child poverty, because essentially the rationale of welfare reform is that you can fight poverty far more effectively by harnessing the work effort of the parent along with welfare, which then supplements income, rather than trying to have welfare be the sole source of income. And what you have here in housing is just a very, very tiny replication of that work-centered principle of reform that's already gone into effect in the cash welfare program. When we look at able-bodied parents that are receiving housing assistance, a third of them don't work at all during the course of a year. Half of them work less than 1,000 hours a year. That's 20 hours a week. And the members of Congress, looking at that fact, said, if we can require some additional activity or require that they engage in supervised search for work, that will help them move into the labor force. It will raise their incomes and help them move out of poverty. That's been very effective in cash aid. We ought to do it in housing aid as well.
Sylvia Brennan, I know you have some reservations about this law. What are your concerns?
Well, I have several concerns, and with all due respect to my colleague, Mr. Rector, I do disagree with his analogy that, in fact, poverty has decreased. In fact, if you look at all of the statistics and all of the latest reports, there was an article in the New York Times a few days ago that, in fact, the number of Americans living in poverty in this country has actually increased by 1.7 million last year.
Absolutely ludicrously incorrect.
And, in fact, the amount of income has declined. In fact, the official poverty rate in this country rose to 12.1% last year.
And we just did a program on the poverty rate, and so we're going to set that issue aside.
What I'm talking about is the poverty rate since 1996, when the welfare reform went into effect, and what we in fact have seen is a dramatic and substantial drop in child poverty. For example, the poverty rate of single mothers went from the mid 40s down to around 30% during that period. That is absolutely without any question. No one disputes that. And in fact, it's just absurd to say that that did not happen. During the last year, there has been a tiny increase in poverty due to the recession.
Well,
could we get to your concerns about the law, please, so we can stick to the topic.
Right. Let me just make one quick comment to that. And in fact, if you look at the recent studies, the Annie E. Casey Foundation released a study in 2003 called Kids Count, and it's a data book which analyzes child poverty. And they found that the child poverty rate in this country is actually among the highest in the developed
country. I do not have the statistics in front of me, so I can't truth squat either one of you on this, to be perfectly honest with you. So I really would like to stick to the topic at hand. I know that figures can be analyzed in many different ways, particularly in regard to this very important subject of poverty. So let's stick to this law that we set out to talk about, Sylvia, if we could.
Well, then let me tell you about some of the concerns.
Just tell me what your concerns are.
Some of the concerns that we have with the re-implementation, I should say, of the community service laws is, number one, that this is, again, what they call up on the Hill an unfunded mandate. There's no additional money to implement the community service requirements, and this is done now at a time when housing authorities have already had their operating subsidies significantly cut by Congress. Those are funds that they used to operate their program, and now they are being told by HUD in a notice that was sent out at the end of June that they had until the end of July to notify residents and until the end of October actually to fully implement. The other concerns that we have are that in this implementation by HUD, they are actually telling housing authorities to completely avoid what's called the annual plan process. And that is a process in which residents are given notice, an opportunity to provide public comment.
Let me ask you a simple question. What is so wrong with requiring people to do 8 hours of volunteer work? What is so terrible there?
Well, the concerns that we have are the following. Number one, HUD has sent out, in response to a multitude of questions that they've received from housing authorities, who, by the way, are opposed to this, significantly across the country, responses to questions about things such as, who would be exempt from this service. And according to HUD, pregnant women are not exempt. According to HUD, folks who serve in the military, their families are not exempt, even on a temporary
basis.
There
is a long list of exemptions, however, as I understand it.
There are. And the main ones are that the elderly, those who are 62 years of age and older, the blind, the disabled, and those who engage in what they call work activities. And as Mr. Rector appropriately pointed out, there are some significant limitations currently on what he calls cash aid. Those are the TANF regulations, the welfare to work type regulations that do impose certain work requirements already on folks not only who are in public housing but who receive TANF. And what HUD has done is, which I think is totally improper and in violation of the law, is actually adopted that same standard by saying essentially that the only folks who are going to be exempt are those folks that are working 30 hours a week or more.
I should point out that we called HUD and asked somebody from HUD to come on the show, and they did not want to come on the show. And let me tell our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're going to take a call now from Clarissa, and she's calling us from New York. Hi, Clarissa.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was an AmeriCorps member, NCCC, this past year, and I had the most amazing time. And there's this quote that service is the rent that you pay for room on this earth. And I think that's a very important quote, mostly because I feel like people should put back what has been given to us. And I feel that for people in staying in HUD housing, I think that's an important factor for them to do volunteer work. And it boosts your mood, and it gives you so much motivation in life to get away from you know, get your life on track, basically.
Clarissa, what, however, if the service is not something that you're, in essence, volunteering to do but being required to do? Does that make a difference, do you think?
Yes, I think it does make a big difference. If I were forced to do that, it can't be called, you know, volunteer work. That's not volunteering. But it is community service, and I feel that a lot of people, maybe after the first or second time, they might feel that it was a great idea for them to do it. There are a lot of times I didn't want to wake up in the morning. I didn't want to go and work for the housing authority and do demolition work or build houses with Habitat for Humanity. But I got up and I did it. And when I came home, I felt great. I felt like I'd accomplished something for somebody else. And I'm sure that those people will feel the same way.
All right. Thanks for your call. Robert Rector, let me ask you the same thing about what it means when somebody's being required to give back or required to do a certain level of service. It's not really volunteering.
That's essentially the change that we made in welfare in 1996, whether welfare would be a one-way handout and an unconditional entitlement, or whether society should require recipients to engage in constructive behavior to help themselves and society as a condition of getting aid. And there really, we basically made a sea change at that point. The society said, no, welfare should no longer be a one-way handout. We need to bring out the best in the recipient, but we need to require them to help themselves. That's essentially the principle that's being applied in very small scale here to a similar welfare program, public housing, that deals with virtually the same population as the old AFDC program. Large numbers of able-bodied adults who are working not at all or working very little. If we can require them to search for a job, or to engage in community service work, the lesson has been that greatly increases the odds that they will work more, have more real employment, and their incomes will go up. It's a win-win strategy.
How do they get hooked up to an organization that they're going to do this community service for? How does that mechanism work?
Usually the housing authority would do that, or the housing authority could work through the Temporary Assistance to Needy Family Program. It's fairly easy to do these things. Also, I would point out that organized or supervised job search also counts here. So if you're working a little bit and you spend some time each month, just 8 hours, going out and looking for a better paying job or for a job where you could work more hours, that meets the requirement as well. The idea here is that, again, the recipients aren't working very much. If they worked more, they would be coming up out of poverty, and we would be able to help that family better, and so this requirement is intended to do that. Also, the exemptions here are very large. If you're already working or employed 20 hours a week, you're exempt. If you have a disabled child you're caring for, you're exempt. If you're searching for a job on a regular basis, you're exempt. If you're meeting the work requirements in another program, such as the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, you're exempt. It's simply those who are working not at all or very little and not participating in any other activity that we're trying to go here and help, because idle dependence is not good for anyone, and we have now a long track record of saying when you go in and ask these individuals to contribute to their own lives, they respond very positively, and they respond just like the caller. They actually feel good about the activities. They feel good about making progress, contributing to society, and making progress toward their own self-sufficiency.
Thanks so much, Robert Rector, for joining us. I'm going to ask Sylvia Brennan now, just very quickly, if you could just sum up your position, your objections to this, and then we have to go.
Well, as I said earlier, the concerns are that, in fact, if you work 20 hours a week, HUD has encouraged a 30-hour work week exemption, so you're not exempt if you work 20 hours a week. And what has not been taken into consideration are the costs of child care while you go out and look for community service, the cost of additional cost of transportation, those types of policies that force residents without additional money to go out and pay for additional child care transportation just to go out and find community service work just do not benefit self-sufficiency, I don't think.
Thanks so much, Sylvia. Sylvia Brennan is Director of Government Relations at the National Housing Law Project. We also heard from Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation. I'm Lynn Neary, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.